Over the last, what, 10 years, digital investing has just completely exploded.
Right.
It's given so many people access to markets that were, frankly, locked up tight.
For sure. A huge shift.
But all that growth has come with a lot of, well, a lot of whiplash, volatility. And now investors are stepping back and asking these really fundamental questions. Like, is this real?
Exactly. Is the value real? Is it sustainable? And the big one, what is this thing actually backed by?
Right.
And that search for something verifiable, for something grounded, is why we're doing this deep dive on asset-backed digital investments. You'll hear it called ABDI.
Yep.
This whole concept is really becoming the framework for building a more transparent kind of digital finance, one with a
Yeah.
clear basis for valuation. It's a stark contrast to the purely speculative stuff out there.
It is. And our mission today, for you listening, is to really cut through the noise and give you the mechanical breakdown.
Okay.
We're going to explain what an ABDI is, of course,
Yeah.
but also the plumbing behind it, the smart contracts, the legal structures that actually make it work, and how that changes the whole risk equation.
Exactly. We'll look at how that alters risk, and we're going to spend a good amount of time on property, which is really the foundational asset in this whole space.
Okay, let's unpack this.
So let's start at square one.
Defining asset-backed digital investments. So the sources, they all define them as digital financial instruments that get their value from real-world assets. But it's deeper than that, right?
It has to be. It's not just digital thing plus building.
So when we say digital instruments, we're usually talking about security tokens. These aren't like your typical cryptocurrencies.
Not at all. A security token is legally structured to represent a real claim. It could be ownership, debt, equity, but it's a claim on that physical thing.
Like a piece of property or commodities or a big infrastructure project.
Precisely. The magic is really in the legal wrapper, not just the code. The value is anchored to something that exists whether the market is up or down.
And that link is legally enforceable.
It has to be. The typical way to do this is you take the asset, let's say an apartment building, and you put it into something called a special purpose vehicle, an SPV.
Right.
The token then legally represents a fractional share of that SPV. And that means you have a fractional claim on the building's income and, its future value.
So that clarity is really the key difference.
It's everything. Speculative tokens, they run on demand, on hype, on perception. ABDI gives you an external, measurable reference point. The building is still standing, generating rent, no matter what the trading volume looks like today.
And I can see the appeal. It's a middle ground. You get the efficiency of digital markets, 24/7 trading, fractional shares, but you're not disconnected from, balance sheet fundamentals.
It's innovation tempered with stability.
Which brings us right to the core of it. Risk. Asset backing doesn't get rid of risk, but it completely changes the nature of that risk. But let me play skeptic for a second, because I know you, the listener, might be thinking this. If property is so stable, why go through all the trouble of tokenizing it? Why not just buy a REIT, a real estate investment trust?
That is the single best question to ask.
What does the digital part add that justifies the complexity?
Okay. Two things that REITs have always struggled with: instant global liquidity and programmability.
Let's dig into that. Start with risk.
Right. So risk changes because the valuation is clearer. The token's value is tied to how the asset is actually doing: rental income, maintenance costs, what's happening in that specific neighborhood.
So the price swings are less dramatic.
They tend to be, yeah. It moderates the volatility because you can use old school, familiar metrics to figure out if the price makes sense. It's not just a guessing game.
Here's where it gets really interesting. How that changes investor behavior.
The psychological shift.
Yeah. I mean, if you know the value comes from a tenant paying rent every month, you're just less likely to panic sell when the price dips for a day or two.
As long as the fundamentals are sound.
Right. As long as the building is full and the location is good, your focus shifts from just chasing price momentum to actually looking at long-term performance.
And that connects directly to programmability. This is where smart contracts become so powerful.
So the self-executing code on the blockchain.
Exactly. A smart contract can automate all the cumbersome stuff. For instance, it can automatically split the rental income every month and send it to all the token holders. No manual escrow, no third party needed.
What about big decisions like selling the building?
That too. Voting rights can be embedded in the token. A proposal goes out, token holders vote digitally, and the outcome is executed instantly and transparently. That automation cuts out so much friction.
And less friction means it's more liquid, easier to buy and sell.
That's the idea. But you've just hit on the big challenge.
Which is?
Custody and data. If the token's value is tied to a physical thing, how do you make sure the blockchain always reflects reality?
Right. If the building has a fire, how fast does the digital ledger find out?
That's the million-dollar question. It's this challenge of on-chain, off-chain data integrity. It's managed by custodians and verified data feeds. They're called oracles.
So you need constant auditing.
You need robust, constant auditing to verify the asset's condition, its income, its legal status. The physical asset stays with the SPV, the legal entity, but the token is your claim. If that link breaks, the whole model falls apart.
Okay, so let's pivot to property itself, since it's the most established asset here. Why property? Why is it the centerpiece for all this?
Well, it provides this incredible dual support mechanism. First, it generates cash flow from rent. That gives the digital unit a yield.
Okay, income.
And second, it offers potential long-term capital appreciation. So digital investors get exposure to both income and growth without actually having to be a landlord.
And I guess there's a familiarity factor. People just, they get property.
They trust what they know. The metrics for valuing a building cap rate's local sales are understood everywhere. That makes it so much more transparent than, say, a new highly complex asset class.
It's also pretty resilient, historically.
Very. Even when markets slow down, people and businesses still need places to live and work. That demand persists through economic cycles, which is exactly what you want when you're anchoring a new technology. You want predictability.
You mentioned fractional ownership. Let's be really clear on how that works. It's not just taking a digital knife and slicing up a building.
No. It all comes back to that legal SPV structure we talked about.
Oh, yeah.
Because the SPV owns the entire asset, the digital tokens can represent these tiny, standardized, and tradable shares of that entity.
Which lets smaller investors get in on big projects.
That's the revolutionary part.
Right.
It allows you to put a relatively small amount of money into a high-quality, expensive piece of real estate. Something that was, you know, historically impossible unless you were a big institution.
That lowers the barrier to entry.
Massively.
Yeah.
It cuts down the need for huge upfront capital. It speeds up cross-border transactions. It removes geographic limits. An investor in, say, Singapore can buy a piece of a performing asset in London almost instantly.
So if we put ABDI head-to-head with a non-backed digital asset, the differences are pretty stark.
It's almost a difference in economic philosophy. When you synthesize it, the first thing is the source of value.
Right. Tangible asset versus market sentiment.
Verifiable cash flows versus belief in future utility and, let's be honest, pure speculation.
And that difference just cascades down into everything else.
It really does. The volatility for ABDI is generally lower. The valuation is based on measurable fundamentals. For non-backed assets, it's often high and depends entirely on trends and perception.
And planning. If you're trying to model your finances long-term, you can actually apply real-world models to an ABDI.
It's much easier to forecast, yes. With non-backed assets, you're trying to predict things like mass adoption or huge regulatory shifts. It's just much harder to model.
This also brings up an interesting ethical angle that was in our sources.
Yes, the alignment with certain global investment principles, specifically Sharia-compliant finance.
We should explain that. Why does this structure work where others might not?
It really boils down to two core principles. First is avoiding riba, which is interest. ABDI investments are linked to real economic activity. Renting out a property generates profit, not interest.
Okay.
The second is avoiding garar, which means excessive uncertainty or pure speculation. Because the value is tied to a transparent, real asset, that element of gambling is significantly reduced. You're participating in real-world productivity.
Which leads us to the big safety question. It's always nuanced, but are they safer?
Generally, they are considered safer than non-backed digital assets. That anchor to reality limits the exposure to pure speculative mania. It tamps down the volatility.
But there's a huge but coming. I can feel it.
Yes. Safety is relative. Asset backing improves transparency. It makes it easier to assess the risk, but it does not remove risk.
You still have market risk.
You still have asset risk. If the local property market tanks, the token's value will go down.
Mm-hmm.
And you have management risk. If the manager does a bad job finding tenants or maintaining the building, the income dries up.
So the digital part makes it more efficient, but it can't save a bad investment.
It can't insulate you from traditional market forces.
Exactly.
And how is that value maintained over, say, 20 or 30 years.
It's all about the asset's ongoing utility, its relevance. For a property, it's the constant demand for that space. But it's also active management, keeping it maintained, making smart upgrades, making sure it stays competitive. If it serves a real purpose, the value holds.
We've focused a lot on property, but to really do a deep dive, what other assets are being used for this? And what new challenges do they bring?
This is where it gets really interesting. You can sort of split them into two camps, fungible and non-fungible assets.
Okay.
So fungible commodities are the obvious ones, gold, silver, maybe some agricultural products. The challenge there is all about custody and verification.
How do you prove the gold is actually in the vault?
Exactly. A token backed by gold needs perfect, continuous, third-party auditing of that vault. Any doubt about that one-to-one ratio between the token and the physical gold, and the entire system's credibility just collapses. Okay, so that's fungible. What about non-fungible, beyond just one building?
Think bigger. Think infrastructure projects. A toll road, a solar farm, a wind energy facility.
Well, that's interesting. They generate predictable cash flows.
For a very long time, often backed by government contracts. They're perfect for this kind of fractional investment model.
But the complexity must be huge.
Immense. The capital structure for infrastructure is often loaded with debt and tangled in regulations. Tokenizing that means navigating a maze of legal hurdles, especially for projects that cross borders.
So your digital token might not even represent equity. It could be a claim on future revenue.
It often is, which changes the risk profile completely. But the core requirements are the same. You need reliable valuation, a clear definition of what you own, and a rock-solid legal structure linking the digital claim to the real-world value.
So to wrap this all up, asset-backed digital investments feel like a more thoughtful way into digital finance.
I think that's a good way to put it.
They force you to shift your focus from hype back to fundamentals. Cash flow, utility, things you can actually verify.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, what ABDI is doing is turning illiquid capital into something globally accessible and programmable.
It's combining the stability of the physical world with the efficiency of the digital world.
It's the stable reference point that I think the digital asset market has been desperately needing.
Okay, so a final thought for you to take away. Considering how strongly the performance of these assets is tied to their real-world utility, you know, the constant need for housing, for energy, the value of physical commodities, how much of the future of digital finance will actually be about linking these super innovative structures back to the most basic enduring needs of the real economy? Is true digital value only realized when it served that fundamental age-old economy? That's something to mull over.
A great question to end on.
Thanks for joining us for the Deep Dives.